we've now passed three and a half or four bills, but three efforts have responded to COVID. I represent a unique area of the United States in that we are, in addition to agriculture, we're also the epicenter for shale fracking and oil and gas production. And coincident with the COVID issue is a dramatic drop in the commodity price for crude oil. In fact, a week ago tomorrow, it went upside down. It was actually up a negative $40 a barrel for crude oil. And that's never happened in my lifetime before. And so our you know, part of the world out here is dealing with the COVID, but also with crude oil as well. With respect to the three efforts, the most recent one, the CARES Act, obviously was the signature issue for the broader effort to try to help all of Americans build that bridge between where we are with respect to the dealing with COVID-19 and also getting to the other side of it and getting our economy back up and running and moving forward. A lot of money is being spent and sent out. Last week, I went back to D.C. to vote on the 3.5 CARES Act, which basically a replenishment of the funding under the main programs that were involved there. As an aside, I don't think I've ever been on a trip with as few people as I was last week. When I went through the airport in Dallas, there were more people in the Lowe's hardware store that I've been visiting with my wife over the last 3 weeks than there were at DFW Airport. A flight from Dallas to D.C. on a 737, there were 12 passengers, 5 crew persons, no cabin service. And then coming home on Friday after the vote Thursday night, there were about 30 of us on the plane. But nevertheless, a surreal experience. If you've not flown yet under these circumstances, it is really weird to go through DFW, which is normally a bustling city in itself, restaurants and all that. Those are all closed. There's a 7-Eleven-esque kind of place that was open, but other than that, there's nothing else going on in that airport. So it's just a weird circumstance. Improvements in the 3.5 Act clearly made ag eligible for the SBA's longstanding emergency injury disaster loan program, which previously had ag would not been eligible for those loans. This 3.5 Act clearly makes ag eligible for that. The bad news is that SBA is being overrun. They underwrite those loans themselves, direct lending from the SBA, and they don't have the capacity to deal with all of the loans that are in place right now or the requests that are in place right now. And so while ag has been added to the program, they've announced that they're not going to deal with new applications for the EIDL program until they get the backlog dealt with. So stay tuned in that regard. On the Paycheck Protection Plan, ag was involved there. Some modifications or interpretations that have helped in that regard is that they've now announced that they'll allow for seasonal workers a floating 12-week period for you to be able to figure out what your payroll is to apply for those. And they still don't have an answer yet on whether what you pay to H-2A and H-2B workers would now qualify for the loans. But nevertheless, progress is being made in that regard also. There's a general comments about the money going out. The CARES Act, also provided, as you know, a replenishment of the CCC, the Commodities Credit Corporation, a partial replacement, a replenishment, but also a $9.5 billion blanket amount for Sonny Perdue to come up with a program to address the unique needs of production agriculture. The particulars, well, that program was announced last week. We still don't have the particulars other than there was announced a payment limit of $125,000 per crop, $250,000 per farmer. That is unworkable. We've shared that with the secretary. He hears it. House members have shared letters. The Senate members have shared letters with the secretary. And as I understand it, they're at least taking a look at it to decide what they can do. They didn't change the total amount announced that the secretary announced last week was $16 billion for production agriculture, $3 billion for direct purchases in commodities. The details on the 16, we're waiting those to come out now with the rules to be written. But if you don't change the 16 and you do change the payment level issue, then that's going to reset how that program is going to be working. And so stay tuned for those announcements. The secretary has been open to our suggestions. But right now, we don't have a lot of information in that regard. The original Senate bill that gave birth to the CARES Act provided for a full replenishment of the CCC up to the $30 billion mark. That's their lending cap, but also an increase in that cap of $20 billion, so that it got to a total of $50. If you took up the $30 billion, which was set, that cap was set in the mid-80s, if you just simply adjusted that for inflation over that time frame, something that Joe and Bart are good at doing, of course, but if you simply adjusted that, it would be $68 billion if the cap had been just kept place with inflation. So you can see how woefully inadequate the 30 is to begin with against inflation-adjusted numbers, which gets us jammed up from time to time. So the 9.5 and the replacement of 30 plus another 20 meant that there would have been about $43 billion in new money or money available for Purdue to have worked with had the Senate bill been passed. Something happened. It coincided with Speaker Pelosi's weighing in. I don't know if it's her or the Senate Democrats who decided that was a bad idea. But the money that came out was the 9.5 that I talked about and the $14 billion replenishment that that gets us to about a total of $23.5 billion that will be available to the Secretary. Way short of the resources that would have been provided had the Senate bill prevailed. I don't know why the Democrats did that. Everybody gets to make their mind up for themselves. But what they did was move the number from $43 billion down to $23 billion. And we can decide, you can ask your Democrat friends why they let that happen and why they thought it was a good idea to take that approach to rural America and the resources that production agriculture clearly needs. Secretary Perdue surveyed the damage it's done to the various industries, and he told me in a conversation that almost every segment came to him needing about $5 billion. And those all totaled up to just north of $40 billion of requests had he been able to make the request for each one of them. He found $6 billion of existing money in CCC that he's going to, or $6.5 billion, that he's going to spend as a part of the 16 and the 9.5. Some of us would have preferred that he go ahead and commit the other 14, even though the restrictions on it placed by, I believe, the Democrats that not be available until July 1st. That he should have committed all of it at that point in time. He chose not to. It's his call to make. We get to put our opinions in, and he chose to go a different route. What that will allow, though, is that once this 16 is dispersed, then he'll have 14 between July 1st and then in September to perhaps come with another round of assistance that maybe is more targeted toward the areas that they get left out or that don't get adequate funding for in the 16 billion. But even the 30 total that will make is way short of the total amount. Don't get me wrong. $23 billion is a stunning amount of money. The 16 that's coming out right now dwarfs what we would do normally in a farm bill increases over 10 years. And so there's a lot of money coming into the program, but there's a lot of hurt and pain. Putting on my Captain Obvious hat, most of America's economy is doing really well ahead of COVID-19. Agriculture was not. So when the rest of the economy goes into the impact, as begins to experience the impacts that the social distancing and the shutdown that's gone on, they had a backdrop of good times coming into that. That was not the case with production agriculture. We're 7 years now of reduced incomes. Incomes are still below the 2013 levels, and all the losses over that time frame, in spite of the government help and assistance that's come in there, producers are still upside down, got more debt than they really need, and we're not in good shape before this started, and they're not in any better shape right now. Let me make a couple of comments on the supply chain, and then we'll get to your questions, and again, thanks for having me on. Supply chain is strained, no doubt about it. Most of that strain is a result of us switching from eating over half of our meals in restaurants to now eating at home. My wife has cooked more meals at home in the last month. And I think in the last 15 years, I'm happy about that. She's may not be all that happy about it. But that supply chain that packaged food for and had set up distribution systems for restaurants now has to pivot back to getting it into grocery stores. And obviously the packaging is different, the labeling is different, all that kind of stuff. And the system is making those adjustments. As a processor, do I make the adjustments that are permanent and I'm going to sell to restaurants again, or do I do temporary things so that we think the supply chain will get back to ultimately all of us going back out to restaurants and eating. So there are things that are going on from just an economic standpoint that the processors are having to come to grips with. And then you begin to have cases of COVID in our meat processing plants that have got some publicity over the last couple of weeks. None of us want anybody to go to work and get sick, but the meat processing is an essential program for our nation. It's a national security issue. All food processing is a national security issue because we've not experienced we've experienced hunger in America, but not because of shortage of food. It's just it's in the wrong spot, or people didn't have the resources to pay for that. But Secretary Perdue is watching this issue on every category as to how the supply chain is coping with that shift from restaurant deliveries to grocery store deliveries, and then at some point in time shifting back to restaurant deliveries. But we're all watching that, and I'm particularly concerned about the meat side. We don't want to have Americans get unduly concerned about their food supply and then go out and do what they've done with toilet paper and sweep the shelves clean of it and have a lifetime supply of toilet paper back home and cause that kind of a hoarding and or panic buying that might result. And so we've got to be nuanced with our conversation, honest. Yes, we're having issues with our plants. They're beginning to shut down. Yes, the system is having to deal with, an example, pigs. Pigs that, because of that just-in-time delivery system, the slaughter plants had just the exact number of pigs they wanted to kill every day at the right weight showing up every day through the process. Now, if they shut down, as they've done in several places, obviously that supply chain gets backed up. That impacts the pricing that flows back down to producers, et cetera, et cetera. So, let's watch the supply chain. Let's be honest with the American people about it. Let's also be careful that we don't unduly scare them into buying things or in quantities that would exacerbate our program. So, got to brag on Bart Fisher. He and Joe Outlaw at AFPC have been really, really helpful throughout the last 4 weeks. And we tried to come to grips with all of the things that we've been dealing with across this spectrum. And they have been invaluable in helping us do what we need to do. So as I understand it, Bart's on the program later on in the afternoon. It would do my heart really good if I got a report that he was asked at least one or two questions that he simply couldn't answer. So put your best questions on and stump the band. Stump Bart for me and let me know that probably one of the smartest guys walking that you guys were able to stump him. So with that, Joe and Charles, be happy to take any questions that someone might have.
Thank you. I'm going to, there's been a number of questions, and I'm going to read the first one. Hopefully you can still hear everything. The first question from Mr. Conaway is, what are the chances of having MFP payments in 2020?
First time I've been asked that, the MFP payments were tied to the trade issues with China, et cetera. Phase one was supposed to be kicking in right now, so a lot of moving parts there. We don't think that the commitment by China was a 2-year commitment in total, not an annual commitment per se. And so we're not sure kind of where those numbers are going. But the secretary has been committed that if the data shows that the this price disruption or the pain associated with the trade disruption with China is related to that, then it would be an MFP-esque kind of payment. The problem there is that those MFP payments come out of the CCC. And if he spends the $14 billion replacement that begins on July 1st, he's only got up to 30 to work with. And we're going to have another replenishment of CCC as a part of whatever appropriations process goes on for fiscal 2020. But I wouldn't rule it out. But I also, given the amount of money that's going to be spent on these payments in this regard, and also the effort among several, Colin Peterson, myself, and others to try to help our colleagues understand that 9.5 and 14 was a great start, but it doesn't come close to getting us where we need to get to. I don't know that we'd have an MFP payment on top of that. So stay tuned. It's too early to tell, but we're hopeful to get additional new resources under Secretary Perdue's tutelage that we then help address this issue.
Well, thanks. A lot of questions about different types of payments. One question here is, how likely is it that the 2018 Farm Bill gets reopened in some manner?
Well, not likely. If Peterson and I have our druthers, because that's a dangerous precedent to set to make that happen. But obviously, the 2023 Farm Bill will be informed by how the system reacted to or didn't react to this this pandemic and the future the opportunities or threat of future pandemics and how the system would react to that. So I'm not in favor of it, but stay tuned. There will be those who want to do that. If that happens, then we may have set ourselves up for a real problem in that the five-year program we've been working under since I've been in Congress and actually somewhat before that, right, wrong, or different, at least allowed you some stability in the program that you and your bankers could count on. If we open it up now and succumb to that, you know, that temptation, then future Congresses can continue to fine-tune that. And, you know, we're not sure that future Congresses will be as sympathetic to production agriculture issues as we were in 2018. Remember, we had 369 votes in the House and 87 votes in the Senate, record numbers in both houses in support of rural America and production agriculture. I don't know that that will always be the case. So I would be I'd be hard pressed to reopen the Farm Bill.
Okay. Thank you. The next question has to do with Packers, and there's two of them. So I'll just read them together and let you respond. The first one is: it's been reported that USDA is investigating beef packers. How long does that typically take? And then the second part of that, maybe related, is a question that came in through the Q&A. I understand just a few minutes ago that President Trump just invoked the National Defense Act, thereby having processing plants to remain open. They wanted to know if there's anything you wanted to say about that.
All right. Well, there's always tension, and it's grown as packing plants across the country, the ownership that's consolidated down to the quote-unquote big four. There's always been tension between the packers and the folks who grow the animals and try to do that. Last year, as you know, we had the fire at the Holcomb plant. It caused a disruption in the markets that didn't look weird. And so the investigation was started on that. I believe that the impact of this coronavirus and the impact it's had on depressed prices for live cattle and live pigs versus the what the packers are getting on the other end of boxed beef is typically a beef issue. Again, disruption that's that may very well be explained by just the market disruptions that are caused by, you know, when I go to a restaurant, I order a higher quality of beef than when I buy it at the grocery store and all those kind of things. And then, the supply chain with packing houses being disrupted on staying open. So I believe that that's been added to the Holcomb investigation. Those things take a long time. But CFTC always looks at disruptions in markets or market prices that go weird from cash market to the commodities. And so that CFTC will be looking at if that ever happens, they look at it as well. But there is an investigation with respect to that. I didn't know if the president was going to get that out while we were on the call, but apparently he has. And deeming the beef packing as a essential under the Defense Production Act, we are still trying to understand exactly what that means. I think it will mean that additional PPP and other equipment, PPE, excuse me, and other equipment necessary to do as good a job as you can to keep the employees who man those packing plants as safe as they can from becoming infected is be a part of that. In other words, it'll hopefully raise the priority status of meat packing from where it is right now to where it will be under this under the president's executive order that establishes this. And so stay tuned. We've had a lot of suggestions on how we could get that done, a lot of conversations with the vice president and others to increase that. You've seen where the CDC has come out with specific guidance on the plant in South Dakota, but it's also come out with broader guidance as to what they believe are their recommendations, not their requirements, but their recommendations on how plants can do the right thing in terms of moving their people in and out of the plant, shift change, breaks, and all those kind of things, what their workstations look like, what the equipment they need within the workstations. All of those things are part of this review that the CDC has just announced, and the idea of being able to allow employers to ask people to come back to work. They want them to be as safe as they can. And we're not sure also what the Defense Production Act does. These are the liabilities that a company might have if people come back to work and get sick with COVID, where that liability lies, either federal government or with the company. Because I know if I was an owner or manager, I would want to make sure that I'm keeping people as, you know, doing the guidelines to keep them safe as I can. But you and I all know that and particularly with respect to agriculture, there's some really wily plaintiff's lawyers out there who can figure out that trucks running up and down the road have become a nuisance because they're driving to a plant that's been in existence for 50 years. And that truck is creating noises that's become a nuisance, and they've sued. And so every owner out there is clearly worried about plaintiff lawyers coming to bear to cause wreak havoc should they get employees get sick.
Thank you. Now there's another series about payments again. So, what are your thoughts on a potential phase four? If we get a new phase four, does that mean that we're going to get additional funding for the CCC?
Well, the phase four is there's some political games being played with quote unquote a phase four. There's an awful lot of things being shopped that could be caught in phase four. Leadership on the Republican side, I agree, it's a little premature to do a broad phase four because we're spending a lot of money flowing into the system now. We really want to see how the recovery begins, which in Texas starts on Friday, how that recovery begins and how that begins to flow through and begins to ameliorate some of the things that have been the negative impacts that have been going on. So before we do a phase four, I want to see where the ongoing wreck is, where the pain is that didn't get addressed in the other issues. And we just don't know that yet. So it's premature across most of society. Ag is not the same way, though. It's clear that just based on this first round of losses between January 15th and April 15th, which is what Secretary Perdue is using the money he's got right now, the $16 billion jest, is woefully short of the impact that coronavirus and the shutdown has had on rural American production agriculture. So I would hope that additional money would be involved in a phase four. Should we get it in the phase four, I'll certainly be supportive of additional agricultural funding in that. But on the broader question of when a phase four might happen, a little premature. As an aside note, Majority Leader announced over the weekend that we were coming back in on Monday of next week. He's announced today that we're not coming back in this Monday because they don't know yet how to function in the House. We had a really orchestrated voting schedule last week, but two votes took about 4 hours to get the two votes done. And that's not conducive to us being able to get our work done. So we've got a six-person panel put together of leaders who are looking at that. They had a meeting last Thursday. We've got another one tonight, I believe. They're coming up with plans and recommendations as to how the House can get back together and function with the legislative body, still social distancing and all those kind of good things. So the idea of a plan four right now in the House, we're working on how to figure out how to get the House back in session, how we can be a little more under quote-unquote regular order than what we've been in the past. But short answer, Joe, is I would be very supportive because I think that the evidence is already in that there's still damage in rural America and production agriculture that has not yet been addressed with the first $3.5 billion bills that have been passed.
Thank you. One question that you may or may not, you could punt this one to Bart if you'd like. For the Paycheck Protection Program, you mentioned additional flexibility. Do you think it will be more workable for farmers and ranchers in the future?
I do. I think they've gone to, say, sole proprietors under the original plan was you had to present a Schedule C for to support your program. Farmers don't use Schedule C, they use Schedule F. Treasury's now announcing that, yep, okay, Schedule F works. We'll get to do those. One wrinkle that we're still trying to push on is that the rules say you have to show profitability, and that's been obviously hard in production agriculture to make that happen. So I do think that Treasury, I've been really impressed both with SBA and Treasury, just how responsive they've been to, no one on the front end could have written all the things that need to be done to make this thing work. But as the issues arose throughout this last 4 weeks, since the first bill passed, the CARES Act passed on March 27th, at every step, Treasury and SBA have been as flexible as they possibly could be in order to try to make this thing work for as many people as possible. So I've been impressed with that. I don't anticipate that attitude changing. So as we find additional issues like this H-2A issue with respect to ag workers and being able to use those costs as part of the payroll computation, still don't have an answer to that. We've raised it over and over with us, the Treasury. The problem with the language of the bill is it says your wages paid to a U.S. resident. I don't know that we can argue that a temporary resident is resident. It's, so how you interpret that. But I know that Treasury is struggling with that issue to try to get some answers. So broadly speaking, they've been really responsive to issues that we've raised with respect to how this bill relates to production agriculture. We clearly, though, on the 3.5 bill that passed last week, added ag to idle programs specifically in order to overcome the rulemaking and everything else that had to have been done to make that process happen. This was just quicker to get it done this way.
Okay. You got a couple of more minutes with us. Hopefully you can hang on. I got two more questions. One that says, we are very grateful and appreciative of all your support and help. But there's a but. There's always a but, Congressman.
Always a but.
But we would like to know when WIP Plus for drought could be paid. Do you know anything about that?
Well, yeah, we've been trying to walk a fine line. There's some administrative issues with respect to WIP Plus. You know, sign-up start, I think, on March 23rd. And moving forward, obviously, with the $9.5 billion money that dropped in their lap and the six that they're going to add to it to get to 16, coming up with that process, USDA has been busy, for lack of a better phrase. And so we've been trying not to put too much pressure on them and just continue to remind them that that's the case. Full Ag Committee has a call here in a few minutes with Secretary Perdue, and I'm pretty confident that issue will come up, and he may have a response to kind of when that might happen. But we have been nudging them as gently as we can, understanding and appreciating the busy thing they've got going on with, obviously, WIP Plus, this bill, the normal process of things that are happening that are going on out there. They've had their plate really full because we want to get the $16 billion out as fast as possible. And that requires them to write rules to do all those kind of good things. And it's, you know, much of the same people are trying to multitask, so to speak, to make that happen. But members are aware of it. We've made Sonny aware of it. And I'll perhaps have a little bit better sense of what that might happen after I call with Sonny here in a few minutes.
Okay, last question. And this one came in on the question and answer, and I'm going to try to paraphrase it for you. Is there a program that could be started where smaller farmers could get more exposure when something like this happens to have more resource opportunities?
Yeah, I'm not sure how to answer that question. Obviously, we do a lot of things on the front end of trying to work with beginning farmers, veteran farmers, young farmers, all those things that go into our farm bill to try to incentivize new farmers to come into the program. You know, the folks at USDA obviously understand, I think that's one of the reasons they put the payment limit to 125, was to want to make sure that group at the bottom, in terms of the scale of production, scale of revenues, is appreciated. I need to think about that one. And obviously, as we go about fine-tuning the 2023 Farm Bill, you know, we do put a lot of emphasis every time on disadvantaged farmers, farm veterans, that kind of thing. But a look at how do these programs react? How did this process react to folks up and down the revenue chain? Folks at the highest revenues, folks as, you know, people that make a living at farming. We need to be careful, though, that if I've got $1,000 revenue off my farming operation, I'm not feeding my family with doing that. And so what the Farm Bill, in my humble opinion, should focus on is those farmers who feed their families and make a living at it, and bigger, and not the folks who aren't, you know, it's a sideline or side business. I got that. Shouldn't exclude them necessarily. But as we look at who we help in these crisis situations like that, the folks who that's their, you know, that they got all in on farming. They don't have other things that they're doing, or their wife is doing something else, but they're, you know, they're a full-time farmer trying to make this thing work. To me, that's who the Farm Bill and these farm programs should take care of first, not ignoring the folks who have smaller operations. But if they're not feeding their families, and they're not, with $1,000 in revenue a year, that's not a farm that's, for lack of a better phrase, systemically vital to the system. Don't let downplay their importance and how, you know, thankful we are for what they're doing. But in terms of public policy, there really needs to be the folks who feed their family doing it, and bigger.
Okay, so I lied to you. There's one question that just came in. Do you have time for one more before you jump?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on your payroll.
This will be the last one more. What about TWIP Plus due to excessive moisture? Presidential disaster declaration just flood, not excess moisture.
So I'm not aware of that problem. I'm aware that we've had a bit of an issue with respect to excessive drying or excessive winds or something like that. It was kind of a was jamming it up. excuse me, working with our folks that Matt Schertz and those guys working with the USDA to make sure that that interpretation wasn't going on. But I'll need to take that one for the record. Matt's on the call with me. He's listening in as well. So we'll take that on the call to see what that might be. But we specifically added excessive moisture and too much rain to the WIP Plus in order to get that done. So let me take that one for the record.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your time, Mr. Conaway, and obviously I speak for this whole group, saying that we wouldn't be in a good position without you, and we really appreciate all your efforts and your time today.
Well, Joe and everybody, Charlie, thank you very much. We get to address you one more time. I appreciate that. My 16 years in Congress, 15 and a half now, has been the highlight of my life. It's been a labor of love, and I've enjoyed every minute of it, and mainly because I get to work on behalf of the folks in this call, some of the hardest working, decent, most decent people on the face of the earth feed me every day, and I couldn't be more appreciative of that. That said, we're going to get through this. Yes, there are hard times, and yes, there are people struggling, and the things going on that are beyond imaginable in terms of 3 months ago, any of us thinking, it's hard in agriculture. Nobody knew it'd be this much harder, 3 months later. But, the system is working to try to provide resources to, help where they can. But just know that we are tougher than these circumstances. We are better than these circumstances. And we're going to get through this as a group. And to the extent that individuals need specific help, my team is always available to have, one-on-one conversations with anybody out there that's specifically needing assistance making this thing work. But Joe and Bart, thank you very much for what you guys do at the Ag and Food Policy deal. And I certainly appreciate being on the call today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.